Early this morning in Geneva, the members of the World Health Organization made history. They voted overwhelmingly to adopt the first ever pandemic agreement. The vote came after more than 3 years of negotiations. And the United States was a key player in those talks, but no longer. Here in the studio is NPR Global Health correspondent Jonathan Lambert. Hey there.
Hi, Ari.
Why do all these countries think the world needs a pandemic agreement?
Well, if you remember, a lot went wrong during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah.
Healthcare workers were rationing protective equipment, and once vaccines came, rich countries got them months and months before poor countries did. So this agreement, sometimes called a treaty, was really born out of that, of public health experts around the world trying to figure out what went wrong and how we can do better next time. But it was getting all these countries to agree was a really contentious process, and there were points when it seemed dead in the water.
Yeah, 3 years. But it did ultimately pass. So what's the reaction, Ben?
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement, and it's a big milestone. Here's how WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus put it.
With this agreement, we're better prepared for a pandemic than any generation in history.
But look, it's not perfect. It lacks tough enforcement mechanisms, and there are still big questions about how it will be funded. But it's a start.
What's actually in the treaty?
So overall, it's really an effort to get all these countries on the same page, working together. The document is 30 pages long, and some of it is focused on preventing pandemics, so trying to limit animal viruses from spilling over into humans or boosting lab biosecurity. And a lot of it is focused on, once there is a pandemic, how do we respond? How do we make sure that healthcare workers don't run out of masks or manufacturers have what they need to make tests and vaccines? But there are still some very contentious details that couldn't be resolved. Countries agreed to basically kick the can down the road on those, and they have a year to finish.
What are some of those contentious details?
Basically, who gets vaccines and treatments and when? During COVID, wealthy countries like the U.S. were often giving out booster shots before poorer countries had even vaccinated a fraction of their most vulnerable population. Hmm. Some research suggests that more than 1 million people died because of that disparity. This treaty is trying to solve that. It will require wealthy countries to share medicines and vaccines with low and middle-income countries. And in exchange, those countries will share health data required to make those medicines and vaccines, like genetic sequences from pathogens. That's been tough to negotiate because richer countries want to protect their pharmaceutical industries, and low-income countries don't necessarily want to just give away all their data for nothing.
And for all this, the U.S. is not at the table.
That's right. The U.S. had helped draft the treaty, but because of the Trump administration's withdrawal from WHO, the U.S. is no longer part of it. And this really worries Lawrence Gostin. He's a global health law expert at Georgetown.
If we're not part of it, it's hard for me to see how the United States gets rapid access to the scientific information we need to really develop vaccines and treatments. And that could be a problem for every American.
And a lot of people think that without the participation of the U.S. as a pharmaceutical giant, the treaty will just be less effective. On the other hand, the rest of the world could rally in America's absence. We'll just have to see.
That's NPR's Jonathan Lambert. Thank you.
Thank you.